And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake up.
Opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Welcome to the podcast. This is Conspiracy Queries, and I am Alan Park. Thanks for tuning in. For those of you that have been following along at home or wherever you listen to this, and I found there's some pretty interesting locations that people listen to podcasts. We have been dissecting and spending time with Cass Sunstein's conspiracy theory paper, and I'm going to just kick into the show right now. I spent a little bit more time on that on the last show than I wanted to, and then I had another topic I was going to go into, and instead I threw in a bonus topic, and then I didn't get to the originally, hey, but that's just freeform, baby. There's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing I can do. Nobody's got a gun to my head so far. Anyhow, all right, let's pick this up. Cass Sunstein, he's a policy advisor, has been a policy advisor for Obama, the president, for years, and no longer is. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing right now. It doesn't matter to me. Maybe he has a podcast. And maybe on his podcast, he explains why he wrote a 30-page anti-conspiracy theory paper. And then later on, when working for the president in such a capacity of trying to expunge the notion of conspiracy theories, then later claimed to not remember ever having written the piece. How many 30-page in-depth analyses have you written that you then, within a year or two, completely forgot you wrote?
So someone's on drugs, senor.
All right, so picking it up, our main, though far from exclusive focus, our running example involves conspiracy theories relating to terrorism, especially theories that arise from and post-date the 9/11 attacks. These theories exist within the United States and even more virulently in foreign countries. Ugh! How do they even know what's going on in foreign countries? Have you ever been to the States and tried to get news from foreign countries? It's ridiculously impossible. All right. Even CNN International is hard to get in the States, and especially those Muslim countries. Oh, boy. The existence of both domestic and because we have to keep pounding that Muslim dagger of fear into the people. The existence of both domestic and foreign conspiracy theories, we suggest, is no trivial matter. Good. So he's answering his question from above. Posing real risks to the government's anti-terrorism policies, whatever the latter may be. Terrorism-related theories are thus a crucial testing ground for the significance, causes, and policy implications of widespread conspiracy theorizing. So it's all about terrorism. It's all about terrorism. This is the greatest threat to ever kill 3,000 people 12 years ago. And I'm not belittling anybody and everybody that died in the 9/11 attacks. However, if you look at government not doing their job, if you believe the official story, they didn't do their job. Nobody got fired. Even if you believe the official story, which to me, it's amazing that anybody that isn't somehow profiting from it believes the official story. I don't know how you can think that this is the most important problem that's going on right now, because if you take the mathematical possibility of an equation, all right, so you look at terrorism and what has happened from terrorism to the United States in particular, and there are other some places too, like Bali and you know Germany and England, but I don't think a lot of American policymakers really care about that. But if you look at how many people that have died from terrorism, and so therefore the financial costs of allegedly preventing that from ever happening again are weighed, you've got an equation there. You've got, say, 3,000 people died on 9/11, And they weren't all Americans, by the way. That's another thing that drives me nuts. 3,000 Americans were killed. No, they weren't. A lot of those people were from all nations of the world. It was the World Trade Center. So stop making it all about me all the time. So you've got terrorism and the deaths that are inherently derived from it, regardless of who is perpetrating it. And then you've got the amount of money, the amount of time, the amount of pressure, the amount of focus, and the amount of government propaganda that is put against that terrorism. And let's look at the dollar figure. Well, I don't know what it is. I don't have those numbers with me. But you could probably find out with a half-decent search how much money, how much of your tax income have you contributed, wittingly or unwittingly, towards fixing the terrorism problem, because terrorism leads to death and destruction. Well, if you look at the death and destruction caused by, let's say, any polluting industry that the government sanctions, that the government is happy to take tax money from, it's completely out of whack. That whole equation is completely skewed, you know, I was going to say a fat man on a teeter-totter, but maybe that's not politically correct anymore to say teeter-totter when it's really a seesaw. So like a gummy bear. It's ridiculous to spend that much money. If they really cared about people's lives, they would spend the same proportionate focus on remedying other problems. In Ontario, the province that I live in, and for those of you in the America, it's just like a state, only we call it a province. It's like a state, but we call it a province. Of Ontario, there are something on the order of 160,000 deaths a year related to air pollution. 160,000 a year. So that's like a million some odd people since 9/11 have died in Ontario from emphysema or other toxic related diseases that were initiated by breathing in the shit we pump into our air that we all agree is okay. So, and I participate in that myself. You know, I drive a car. I don't have a transporter device to reorganize my molecules like on Star Trek. And I try to spend as much time as I can not doing that. I try to take public transit when I can. I do what I can. But we're all guilty of it. And so therein lies the problem. Why are we doing this? Why are we allowing the constant fossil fuel belching of vehicles and those types of things, the toxins that are expunged from apparently legitimate enterprise? Why are they allowed to do that? Why do we constantly find ourselves relying on the same old, and pretending that our lives can go on just as well as they have? That's where you want to spend some of the money that they're pissing away with security and rooting out terrorism, because it has to be that way. Proportionately, far more people die from things that we do every day and things that we've got to change the paradigm. That's what has to happen. And that's a really difficult thing to do. I have tried to change a couple of paradigms, and when you're by yourself, it just doesn't happen. But we need to spend some time at least figuring out how we may go about this to lower those pollution-related deaths. And again, that's just in Ontario. That doesn't count the other provinces, of which there may be a higher amount or a lower amount, depending. But still, it's depending on the industry of that province and the proximity to dense smelting industries and coal-fired plants that ring the Great Lakes. But it's still something that needs to be looked at and spent some time on. So if you really cared, if the government really cared, and so many people believe that they do, and so many people think, oh no, the government wouldn't do anything to hurt me. you're out of your mind. I mean, that's my conspiracy query. How do you think that they care about you when they put so many millions of dollars, billions of dollars, into terrorism prevention theories and terrorism obstruction and letting you know that there is terrorism? Remember the color codes they used to have in the States? Orange, yellow, red, blue, green. You know, that didn't work. It was nonsense. And they spent millions on that. I mean, it's ridiculous. So this needs to be changed. And this is solid proof that this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This Cass Sunstein, he's not really coming up with the notion unless he's thoroughly indoctrinated. But I get the sense that he's probably more one of the indoctrinators. Or is it indoctrinators? I don't know. He's one of those guys. He's a propaganda wank. So anyway, so terrorism-related theories are thus a crucial testing ground for the significance, causes, and policy implications of widespread conspiracy theorizing. I think I said that already, but it's a good point. As we shall see, foregone conclusion, an understanding of conspiracy theories has broad implications for the spread of information and beliefs. Many erroneous judgments are a product of the same forces that produce conspiracy theories. And if we are able to see how to counteract such theories, we will have some clues about how to correct widespread errors more generally. This is like Goebbels in Hitler's time, coming up with, if we can just figure out how these people are starting to figure out that we're all full of shit, we can continue being full of shit. That is the underlying theme of this paper. I'm getting pissed off now. I'm supposed to be having fun in here and talking about things that are interesting, and now I'm reading this thing that lives and is so much a part of governmental policy and lackeys in Canada that just go, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, go along with it. Drives me insane. Okay, that's it. I'm going to move on. I can't even talk about it anymore. I got myself all worked up. All right. I wish it would go away, but it doesn't go away. It's the seamy underbelly of what's going on out there. Okay, I'm just coming down a little bit. I'm going to pause for some delicious tea. If you know what this is like, send me an email. Okay, this is the sound. Listen to this. I'm going to bring my throat into this time a little better than last time. Here we go. Oh, man, that is good. Some beautiful raw honey in there. Got to get the raw stuff. And yes, on the last show, on our last podcast, we mentioned that there was a politician who said that the Iraq war is unwinnable. And, you know, politicians like that, they tend not to last very long when they come up with those theories because, and that's a theory, isn't it? When they say things like the war is unwinnable, there's usually a heavy price to pay. And that is usually the case. But what happened this time is that it's the person saying it is actually Stephen Harper. Yeah. Stephen Harper. He's the... boy, well, if you're in Canada, you know who he is. Let me see if I can explain Stephen Harper to someone living in a different country. Stephen Harper is a giant Lego helmet that has inexplicably grown feet and now, for a long time, rules over our country. And I mean rules over. He has got so much control over what people say and what people do and what you get to find out about what's going on. He fired a nuclear watchdog person who, you know, put out an alarming report on Chalk River, which is a nuclear facility in Ontario, up near a military base, up in Petawawa. You ever go up there? And he's just bad news, that is for sure. The other thing that I wanted to mention was that just earlier this week, a general in Britain, who I believe are still in Afghanistan, has come up with the cherry nugget that the war in Afghanistan is unwinnable. Oh, okay. So everything I've been saying for the last 10 years, I don't know why they're just realizing now that the country that historically has never been conquered and pretty much broke the financial back of the Soviet Union when they were still the Soviet Union, when they invaded what was going on there, there you got screwed going in there. And I don't know where we didn't pick up that lesson and why we think it's a good idea to go in there, and how, more importantly, how did they manage to brainwash so many people to believe that, well, this is a good idea, and support the troops. If you really want to support the troops, you don't send them into a place that is pointless to even be there, and that they can't win, and that they don't have any justification for being inside that country in the first place. That is how you support the troops. You know, that is what it should be going on. And at some point, this is the question that really sits in the forefront of my mind. I don't think I'm any kind of genius at all. But what I do think is that other people, as well as myself, have come to the conclusion a long time ago that it was a huge mistake going into Afghanistan. And I think someone who's deciding to go into Afghanistan must also know that. They must have known that they weren't going to be successful. What did they really think was going to happen there, other than, you know, killing and injuring thousands of our own people, never mind the people that were dropping bombs on during a wedding party? What did they really think was going to happen? And that's the question that I don't think I'm the only one that could possibly have foreseen, that there would be disaster as a result of this thing. But our prime minister did several years ago. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention he was on American television on CNN with Fareed Zakaria conducting an interview in 2009 when he said that. He didn't say it up here. He never said it in Canada. Like, we're not supposed to be watching CNN. He must be down in New York thinking, well, nobody knows who I am down here. I don't have to get reelected. I'll tell the fucking truth. And he did. And he was right. But you never heard anything of that nature when he came back home and trusted that we didn't either. And no one in our media picked that ball up and ran with it. No one from CBC or especially CTV or Global picked up that ball and said, while in the States, you said the war was unwinnable. Why are we still there? Nobody picked that up. Why is that? And I don't have an answer for that query, but I would like to. All right, I'm going to move on to another topic now. We have a little bit of time, and I will probably spend a bit more time on this topic on the next show, but I'm running out of time again. This is from CPAC. This is in the United States. Now, first of all, if you know me, if you've listened to the show, you've probably already learned that I'm not a big Obama fan. I don't think he's the answer. I knew people would be disappointed. I watched the mesmerized, spellbound crowd in early 2009 when Obama was sworn in the first time. The hope that was there, it pulled up a feeling in me, a simultaneous feeling, one of amusement and one of sadness, a deep sadness based on knowing that, you know, thousands of those people, hundreds of thousands, millions perhaps, of those people were going to be let down with the reality. And the reality is that Obama has carried on and intensified so many of the negative, dark, deep, and ugly programs that the Cheney-fueled Bush put together in the first place. It's almost like it's even worse. And I think this has become the paradigm in the United States. I don't know how long it's been going like this, but you've only got the two choices. It's like I said earlier in the Sunstein piece, you know, it's either this or this. Well, what if it isn't those two things? And you're just presenting that as my option. So, but with all that being said, I love when the Republicans lose. I like a good horse race like anybody else. And so they were beaten. They were they put their policies out there. They put their rapists out there. They put their their gay politicians who pretend to be straight and enforce and inflict anti-gay legislature out there. They explained that rape wasn't such a big deal. They're not friendly to women, generally speaking, that party. They don't really have a humanity. They can't seem to reconcile their supposed Christianity with the attitude of the poor and the sick of, I don't really care about them. They can't seem to reconcile that. So I do love seeing them lose. And whether they win or lose, every year they have CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, which is a gathering of these folks. And boy, oh boy, I watched this one the other day. This is Phyllis Schlafly, who is, that name just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Makes you want to buy a couple of drinks and maybe pull down the sheets and say, wow, let's get Schlafly on you. So Phyllis Schlafly, she's 116 years old. She's been preaching hate and venom since the 60s or before. And she was at CPAC this year, the 2013 CPAC. And she is introduced onto the stage by a an entertainer of sorts named Steven Crowder. And let's bring Phyllis up. I'm not going to spend any time on Steven Crowder, maybe on another show. But he brings Phyllis to the stage. Now, this is, remember, they've just lost the election and things aren't going well for them and haven't been going well for them. And there's a bit of an internal struggle going with the Republicans. There are certain factions, the Tea Party, and there's some of the people in the Tea Party don't like each other. And some of the people in the Tea Party don't like the mainstream Republicans. And this is going on and on. But somehow they throw them all together in this tent. And they have their big meeting, and it kicks off with a little old country music. And it's not really fair to say I don't enjoy country music, but it is. It's pretty fair to say that I really don't like country music that I've never heard of from. It's called Florida Georgia Line, and they play a song called Cruise, and that's what they bring Phyllis Schlafly up onto. Cruise from the Florida-Georgia line. I think we all know that Florida-Georgia line, back in the day when Phyllis Schlafly was fending off all the people hitting on her back when she was a Southern Belle or whatever the hell she was, that these are the kind of people that the only good black person is a black person hanging from a tree. And they don't use the black person word. But anyway, so that's what she's all about. It just reeks. Her entire speech reeks of it. But I'm going to stop this here and there as we listen to it. And, man, I think you're going to enjoy the pain that's going on with so if we got our level set, I think I'm pretty good here. And we're going to kick it off. So she's just been introduced onto the stage, and she comes tottering out. Here we go. That's her. Now she's walking out to the podium to this Cruise song. All right, Phyllis. Let's hear you, Phyllis. Come on, get up to the podium. My goodness, it's not that far away. She's waving. Listen to this. It starts right away.
Well, good morning, conservative CPACers. Great to be here. And thanks to Sarah Palin for her leadership.
Okay, thanks to Sarah Palin for her leadership. Right. Isn't that, that's going to give you some credibility right there. Sarah Palin and leadership, they go hand in hand like a Jell-O and cooking oil, right? Oh my God. So Sarah Palin has come out earlier, and I could have played that clip. I could have played the clip of Sarah Palin. It's equally hilarious. She's lost some weight. I don't know how, but she's still a rootin' and a tootin'. And I would suggest that at a CPAC meeting where she no longer is allowed to be a commentator on Fox News, the far-right, right-wing propaganda think tank. She's not there anymore. John McCain, realized well after the fact that it was a huge mistake having her on his ticket when he ran with her in 2008. See the movie Game Change with Julianne Moore. She's fantastic in it. And from Insider Reports, quite accurate. It's hilarious that this woman would. So right away, to me and to a lot of people, watching this, admittedly not the folks there, but she's lost her credibility. But she goes on. Here we go.
Warming up this great crowd.
And she warmed up
we
the crowd.
We appreciate it.
Warm up act now,
Sarah.
That's the leadership we're talking about.
I think we need to analyze why we lost last year to a candidate, Barack Obama, who has said he wants to fundamentally transform America in ways we don't want to be transformed. I would suggest
that I don't think that Obama said, I'm going to fundamentally transform America into ways we don't want it to be transformed. I think that's a misquote. I think she doesn't know what she's talking about. I think it's time to sit down with the knitting needles and maybe crack open another episode of General Hospital. But no, she's there instead. So here we go. Let her continue.
The Democrats had a better ground game than the Republicans. They didn't make use of all you volunteers to get out the vote on Election Day. And I'll give you an example of how the Democrats were so clever in using early voting to get their people to the vote.
Okay, so she's going to give an example of how the Democrats were so clever using early voting to get their people out to the vote, which is completely legal according to their own rules. So already they have a problem with it because it didn't help the Republicans. It didn't help the Republicans get into the White House, so therefore this rule that previously has helped the Republicans and they've been okay with, so she's setting it up like it's some kind of a crime, and it isn't. But let's hear her describe it more. And somebody get her a glass of water.
To the polls. Michelle Obama made a speech at a university in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
and they had set up one of the early voting places
yes.
right across the street.
Well, that's
so
smart.
She gave her speech about Obama
mm-hmm.
and then said, "I'll march right out and vote for him right now."
Yeah.
And that's the way they got a lot of their votes.
Oh, my God. So you're telling me that what they did was they told people their party platform position and did it in close proximity to a voting station in a legal time frame to be able to go and vote. And then the people were so empowered, not listening to your rapist loving nonsense, that they went out and voted. How horrendous. We got to bring this to a stop. OK, do you have another point?
And, of course, there's some fraud, too. you know that.
So she admits at least that that's not fraudulent and then admits that there is fraud or claims that there is fraud. And I think if you've done any research into American elections, there's all kinds of fraud going on. George Bush didn't even win the vote first time around. Anyhow, I'm sure Phyllis wasn't up there complaining about that. Or was she?
But then you look at the Republicans, and unfortunately, we let the establishment pick another loser for us.
Whoa! Big slam on Mitt Romney. We let the establishment pick another loser for us. Another loser. And so don't just listen to Phyllis saying that. Listen to, I'm going to just go back a couple seconds if I can jimmy that back a little bit. When she says that, listen to the crowd. I mean, it's like a comedian bombing, okay? She says, picks another loser for us. So she's slamming Mitt Romney and then listen to the crowd in the background.
For him right now. And that's the way they got a lot of their votes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's some fraud too. you know that. But then you look at the Republicans. And unfortunately, we let the establishment pick another loser for us.
And
two people.
The fight we have.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute.
The fight I'm asking you to engage in is between the establishment and the grassroots. Because the establishment has given us a whole series of losers. Bob Dole and John McCain and Mitt Romney. And
speaking of losers, here you are at the CPAC convention shitting all over your most prominent members over the past several years. Well, Phyllis Schlafly, you are out of your mind. I love it. Keep going. Keep going. Give me a little more. We've got time for a few more minutes of Phyllis. I mean, this is, I don't know why I find this entertaining, but I do. I love seeing the Republicans lose and looking for their way. Here we go.
Even when they picked a winner, George W. Bush, they picked somebody who spent more than the Democrats.
Ooh,
he added
no
new
there.
Programs that cost money to cost the taxpayers money.
Uh-huh.
And he tried to give us open borders first through the North American Union and then through the amnesty that he lined up with Ted Kennedy.
With all them dirty Mexicans coming up and taking our jobs that we're not smart enough to hold. Yeah, so she's dumping all over these prominent Republicans and the crowd, except for a few people here and there. Yeah, pretty much silent, not going over well.
So we need to have the grassroots take over and elect the kind of candidates Sarah Palin has been backing, like Ted Cruz.
The kind of candidates that Sarah Palin has been backing, like the one she backed when she was running for vice president of the United States that I just dumped all over, that isn't doing any good because he's a loser. So I think maybe what happens when you get a little bit older and you're already a Republican to begin with, you really lose it. Phyllis goes on for what seems like an eternity, but we're going to stop her right there. That's enough for her. I just wanted you to know she is supposed to be one of the fine, more prominent conservative minds. And I don't know why they invited her there. Maybe she made the crumpets. I don't know. Maybe she put together some baked goods. I'm not really sure. Just before I go, I would like to remind you that I am deeply pleased and very happy to know that you're listening. And I hope you're asking yourself the same questions that I'm asking myself. What the hell is going on? And why don't we ask questions about why we don't ask questions? So if you have any comments or queries, email me at conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or go on the website conspiracyqueries.com. And see, I didn't even put my name in the, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to do that. My name's up on the picture, but, you know, I didn't put my name on the website. It's just conspiracyqueries.com. You can contact me there. You can see, I'll have that clip up there of Phyllis Schlafly or whatever her name is. You can check that out and enjoy it. And honestly, spend some time listening to the crowd in the background. That's where the real entertainment is on that piece. And tune in again next time when we will cover other different thought-provoking subjects. And hopefully I will be soon speaking with a couple of different people and having, hopefully I can get them in the studio, but if not, on a Skype or phone chat regarding some of these issues. So thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries. I'm Alan Park, and you need to know what's going on.